I've been involved in Redhill Baptist for a long time now. I've done various roles there, led the youth, been an elder for a period of time as well, various other responsibilities. And those are my credentials. I hope those are sufficient. I'll tell you a bit more about me in a moment. What I want to share with you this morning, are we on? There we go. Thank you, Andy. You had just now a few different readings, and these are ones which I'm going to dip in and out of and connect in with what I'm talking to you about this morning. If you looked at your notices, it said that I wrote a book some time ago. It was called Would God Go Shopping, and I'll come back to why I wrote that book. And what I want to say this morning is connected very much with that. We heard Psalm 24 read to us, and it says this. I'll move away from this. I'm getting too much. Fold back. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. I want to pick out three things from that. Firstly, the word earth. When the Bible talks about the earth, it generally means the beautiful creation that God has given us. It might seem as though then it's re-emphasizing that. The psalmist is saying the earth, the world, is actually a slightly different meaning, because when the Bible talks about the world, it's normally about that human spiritual aspect of the world and then all who live in it. And I like to suggest that's people and all the other living things on the planet. These are the Lord's. Sometimes as Christians we can just focus on that part, that human spiritual aspect. And today I want to say that all of those things are important. The earth, the world, and all who live in it. Quiz for you. What does WJD stand for? What would Jesus do? When I wrote my book, I tried to come back to this all the time. What would Jesus do if he was in my situation, my position, my shoes, day in, day out? It's a very good question to ask ourselves every day. Another little quiz for you. Let's see if my technology works now. And this is a Beat the Intro. I hope you like Beat the Intro. So first hand up, what's this song? It's not a Christian song. Here we go. Is it going to work? Is there a sound on, Andy? Let's just try it again. Here we go. It was working. Let's try it again. It's the silence. It's called the silence song. Oh dear. All my embedded technology. Try one more time. Should be working now. Yeah. I might just have to sing it to you. No, it's not going to come. No. Now, I'm not sure which hand went up first. I've got to let it play because I really like it. It's a beautiful bit of piano. Okay, too much of a good thing. So, what was the song? It is Bruce Hornsby. Can you? Just the way it is. Well done, sir. If I had chocolate, I'd give it to you, but that young lady's already stolen it. Okay, the reason I like that is because of the words in the song. It's just the way it is. Some things never change. That's just the way it is. Oh, but don't you believe them. And I think as Christians today, we are called to challenge the injustices in the world, not just to accept that the global economy is the way it is, that things happen and run the way they do, and we just have to accept that, because we are called to be salt, to be light, and not just accept the things which are unfair and unjust in our world. As Micah says, we are called to act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly. I'm going to tell you a story about a rich man. Once upon a time, there was a rich man. He was a young man. Sadly, his parents had passed away when he was in his early 20s, but they left him an awful lot of property, a whole estate, farmland as well. And his financial advisor said, young man, you have enough to live comfortably for the rest of your life. But the young man didn't want to live comfortably. He wanted to live extravagantly. And so after the first year he was in debt, he spent more money than the income was bringing in from the farm. He had to sell some of the land. But he didn't learn his lesson. The next year he went on, he carried on spending too much money. So he sold more of his land. Eventually he had to sell the houses that some of the farm workers worked in and say, sorry, you don't have anywhere to live anymore, off you go. Eventually he spent so much money he had to sell his own house and became destitute. This is a story about us, about human beings on planet Earth. I don't know if any of you like maths, but I'm going to do a little bit of maths with you. You'll find out why I like maths in a minute. If you had, let's say, £100,000, everyone's thinking, oh, I wish I did, to invest, and you got 10% interest, everyone's thinking, I wish I did get 10% interest on my savings, then each year you could spend £10,000, whatever you liked, and the next year you get another £10,000 interest. But if you spent £20,000, you're eating into your capital as well. So the next year you only have £90,000. The interest on that is less, but you carry on spending £20,000. So the next year you only have £79,000, but you carry on spending £20,000. What you can see is we're eating into the capital, and the interest is running down. It looks rather like this as you go forwards. It's not a good story. Now I want you to think about this as not being the capital interest on money, but planet Earth. This is our beautiful world and the fact it can give us all sorts of good things. The food that we have, the fresh air, the fresh water, all the things we need to survive. And each year it can produce a certain amount, but what we do as human beings is take too much. So this isn't a story about money in the bank, it's a story about planet Earth. The capital is our beautiful world that God's created. The interest is what it can give us to survive on. But we take too much. And the reason there are people demonstrating on the streets now is because they're very worried about this. We've got it very wrong. And if you continue going down, it's just an analogy. There's no sort of time frame or finance on it. But eventually it runs out. We heard that verse from Luke, the rich young man. It says ruler, different versions that I've got down as rich young man. Is this you and me? Are we actually the rich young men who want to hang on to what we've got? We may think, I'm not rich, but actually if we live in this country, own a car, go on a holiday, in global terms, we're pretty rich. And Jesus said, go sell all you have and give to the poor. It's quite a challenge, isn't it? Okay, so who am I? I'm Marcus Colville. I'm actually a head teacher. I'm head teacher at an independent school in Reigate, a prep school. It's a choir school. And I'm here because I went on a journey. About 10 years ago, I probably started asking the sorts of questions that many of you would have asked. Why is it that the people we look up to in society, top bankers and politicians, are behaving so badly? The politicians who are misclaiming expenses. Do you remember Duckgate, Duckhousegate? People say, yes, I can claim for a duck house in my pond because I'm a politician. Bankers selling subprime mortgages knowing they were going to very badly damage the global economy, but not caring because it was more important that they got rich. How do these people get into these positions? What drove them to behave that way? As I say, I'm not sure lots of you have those similar conversations with people. So I thought I would ask all the head teachers in the choir school association. I thought, good Christian people, they'll have all the answers, surely. So I did a survey, and the sorts of things they came up with when I said, why has the moral compass gone so wrong? They said things like, people stand on their rights, but they don't accept their responsibilities. People lack integrity these days. They will do things when they're not seen that they know they shouldn't do if people were looking at them. They said things like, there's a lack of community, and so as people get richer, they sort of build walls around themselves, physically and metaphorically, and try and keep other people out. And so community is being eroded as we all get slightly wealthier as well. Then someone said this one, we're living unsustainably. Sort of aware of that, but not as much as I had become. And this is impacting us socially, economically, and environmentally. So I did some more research, and someone said, read this book. You probably don't know this man, Dr. James Martin, but he's credited as being the fourth most influential person in the world of computer science. Even in the 1970s, he was a bit of a futurologist, a systems analyst. He could say that, you know, you put these things together, this is where we'll end up. And he predicted the advent of the internet before most of us even knew what a computer was. In his book, he said this, and I was a bit shocked. I was a head teacher with a science background. He said, the public is spectacularly ignorant about major scientific issues. I thought, surely not me. I'm a head teacher. I teach science. But actually, when I started reading, I thought, crumbs, I am so ignorant of very significant, serious scientific issues. If I am, that means most other head teachers, most other people who mold education and direct the education for young people, they're also going to fall into that category. So I did lots of research, ended up writing a book, which I'll come on to in a moment. having looked at things like this Millennium Eco Assessment, it was saying that all of the eco services, the things that give us food and fresh water and fertile soil, all the things we need to survive, were being run down faster than they're being replenished. Just going back to that table I put up just now, it's quite frightening. Globally, population growth and resources were being reviewed, and there's a paper written by the Royal Society called People and the Planet, and they concluded things like this, that we've got 30 to 40 years to sort the problem out, to make the world a better place for the majority of humanity, or we're going to have environmental and social catastrophes on a scale never imagined. If you know anything about science, scientists don't use these sorts of words lightly. They're very reticent to use this sort of language unless they are convinced. And as long as an excessive competition between nations continues, the future of humanity is in doubt. Really big words. Wow, quite scary stuff. But if you look at it, what's Trump doing these days? He's competing with China to be the most powerful nation. It's all about growth and money. So all those things that were being read just now, they fit into this, because that's what drives the human heart for so many people. It's not what's good and better for everyone. It's who can have the most money. I looked into things like climate change. I could spend hours boring you on this, but it was quite frightening where temperatures are going. You'll all be aware, trillions of tons of ice disappeared. This is Patagonia in Chile. This in the last 80 years or so. The ice caps are melting faster than even the scientists predicted. We're suffering worse droughts, famines. We don't see as much of this on television these days because it doesn't make good viewing, but there's plenty of it going on in the world, sadly, shockingly. This was in Australia. Andy will resonate. This was in January, the hottest day they'd ever had, and this was wild horses who went looking for water in what was a river, and they just found a dried up riverbed, and tragically all died. We're getting stronger storms, we are getting stronger storm surges, we are getting more flooding around the world, record wildfires and so on. This is from one degree of warming, and yet scientists say if we carry on going the rate we're going, we're on track for 4 degrees by the end of the century, which will be catastrophic. The oceans are taking an awful lot of the heat as well. You'll be familiar with corals bleaching. It's not just the loss of the corals, which is tragic. It's also the fact that 25% of all marine ecosystems start with coral reefs. 25% of all those food chains will be gone if the corals go. There's been a lot of the news about the burning of the rainforests as well, and most of that's just to clear it for more meat, more beef, so that the wealthy people can have beef. We destroy the lungs of the earth. Who's feeling really depressed? Yes. Yet we still burn 20 million tons of coal, 17 million tons of oil every day. Another little scientific fact. Apparently the Earth is still gaining about 0.6 of a watt of energy per square meter every day. That's about an LED's worth of energy for every square meter on the ground. But because the world is so big, that's the equivalent to about a nuclear bomb's worth of energy being spread around the world every 5 seconds or so. There are energy solutions. We don't have to live this way. And when I read all this stuff and got quite scared about it as a head teacher, I thought, what should I do? What's my response? So I wrote a book, and this book was called Don't Hide the Truth. It was all about, we have to get this into education. Why is it that we're bringing up children to live the foolish ways that we've lived? We've got to make a difference. We've got to change that. That's why Greta, what an amazing young lady, calling the world to arms. She's out on the streets with millions of people last Friday saying, we've got to do something about climate change. Governments, you have to listen. It's our future. Unlike this young lady, you'll die of old age, we'll die of climate change. Debatable, she might be right, unless we deal with the problems. So, I haven't just come here, I promise, just to depress you. One of my responses was this. I started developing a program of work called Education for Social Responsibility, ESR. If you have children or grandchildren who are of primary school age, do go and speak to their head teachers and say, do you teach this? Do you teach Education for Social Responsibility? There's a company based in Hawley that produces resources to help teach children all about these things. We have to get it to our children so that they can look after the planet and other human beings as well. So what's this shopping connection then? My book, my second book was called Would God Go Shopping. I did some more research and I realised that whenever we get anything that's been manufactured, energy's gone into making it. So anything that's made from metal or plastic or glass, a lot of energy has been used. If you go and get an apple from next door, from the farm next door, obviously it's a lot less. But on average, for every pound we spend, about 400 litres of carbon dioxide goes into the atmosphere. So our shopping adds to climate change. Most people don't know that. Also, I did some other calculations. If their cattle are raised on grain, for every quarter of a pound of meat that goes into a beef burger, the amount of grain that cow had or that cattle had to eat was enough to feed a child in Africa for a whole week. So I started thinking, this is so unfair. We are getting our nice rich meat foods at the expense of being able to feed other people on the planet. And as a Christian, I think that's wrong. Takes 700 litres to produce a pair of jeans, and yet much of the cotton that's produced to make those jeans is made in parts of the world where there's a shortage of food. And yet the powerful nations control what is grown there because that's what makes the money. Is that right? I think you'd agree it's not. And there's these massive imbalances here. 60 cents, that's what she's paid to make the garment, and in the States she bought it for $50. 90 cents, $85, $1 for a whole outfit, that's what she was paid to make it, and yet it cost $100. And we'll come back to those sort of inequalities in a bit. Rana Plaza, I'm sure you're aware of that collapse of the factory in Bangladesh. There were cracks appearing in the walls the day before it collapsed, and yet the workers were told, you come to work or you won't have a job. So they didn't lose their jobs, they lost their lives instead, because they aren't protected as we are. The poor people don't have a voice. The poor people don't have associations. This is Ivory Coast. Children don't go to school. Instead, they're made to work in open mines for coltan, which provides the metals for all of our electronic devices, our mobile phones and all the electronics we have these days. And it's believed about 150 million children don't go to school. Instead, they have to go and work in factories. They will never have an education. Why? So the developed nations can have cheap stuff. Some facts about the fashion industry. Second most polluting. Leads to about 3 million tons of waste every year, just in the United States. The United Kingdom's not quite so bad, but I think as the years go by, more people just go shopping as a hobby. Forces the poorest people into deeper poverty and often dreadful working conditions, and leads to millions of acres of land being used where food should be grown. Instead, they're producing crops. So this is why I wrote a book, Would God Go Shopping? Because I thought, if I didn't know this, most other Christians won't either. And I'm sorry if you're feeling a bit depressed, but unless it really hits home, we're not going to change our ways. And the planet is going to continue to be depleted, and poor people around the world will still continue to be impoverished. I think it's worth thinking about how do we get here, and it was interesting what Ivan was saying about the fact that people worship money. You wouldn't know, I doubt, if anyone does know this person, I'd be very impressed. His name is Victor Lebeau, and he wrote a paper in 1955 called Price Competition. He didn't create the global system that we now live by, but he articulated it very well when he said this. He said, our enormously productive economy demands that we make consumption our way of life, that we convert the buying and use of goods into rituals. And notice the words here, that we seek our spiritual satisfaction, our ego satisfaction, in consumption. And we need things consumed, burned up, worn out, replaced, and discarded at an ever-increasing rate. I imagine you'd all look at that and think, what a ridiculous way to live. Who would ever suggest that's how we should live? And yet, developed world economies do live that way. That's how we function. The whole focus is on GDP, gross domestic product, how much can be bought and sold and keep the machine going. So as consumers, your job is to do this. You have to make consumption your way of life. Would that be okay? Convert the buying of goods into rituals. Go shopping every week because that's what you do. Speak your spiritual satisfaction in that. Here's some other suggestions. Instead of making consumption your way of life, what about pursuing love and justice as your way of life? Converting the buying of goods into rituals. How about just buying what we need, not what we want all the time? Seek your spiritual satisfaction in consumption. How ridiculous. What about in a deeper, closer relationship with God and with our brothers and sisters? ego satisfaction and consumption, I think not. Actually, what we need to do is get our ego, our personal satisfaction from bringing God's love into the world. And then that last bit, taking your part and making sure things are used up and worn out. How ridiculous. No, we need to have a sustainable future for ourselves, for our children, and for their children. Just going back to this, how do you think you're getting on? Do you think individually that there are things that you do where you consume more than you need to? This is what our economic success looks like, but we don't see it. This is what goes on out of eye shot. We had this read to us just now. Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, because life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. What the world around us is constantly saying is, oh yes, it does. To young people, you have to have the latest Nike trainers. To those young executives, you have to have the flashy Audi car. All different stages of life, there's something saying to us, this is how your garden should look, your house should look, this is the holiday that you should have. It's not wrong to have those things, but it's not an abundance of those that gives us meaning in life. What are we chasing after? Where does our default go? What do we think about most of the time? Is it actually, how do we serve the Lord, or is it like the rest of the world? I'm going to chase after these things. I won't do it very obviously, but you know in your heart where you are personally. Are you content, or do you get caught up in all of that stuff? We have fantastic cities, incredible shopping centres these days. We can just order at the touch of a button and things get sent to our door. Just don't forget, that's what it costs the planet. That's what it costs other human beings. We don't see it, so it doesn't come into our thinking. So it's not just the environment, it is human beings that suffer too. I showed you this picture just now, but I'm going to show you a short video clip. Again, it's quite hard-hitting, and I hope it won't offend anyone. But again, unless it really goes deep, do we change our ways? And you can say to other people, have a look at this. I'm sure you all know people. You may have family members who are really focused in on growing their own world of wealth. And if you are, you can just say to them, this is on YouTube. It's 2 minutes long. Take a look at it. I'm going to show it to you, and hopefully the sound will work.
We communicate who we are through clothing. It is fundamentally a part of what we wish to communicate about ourselves.
We used to have a system, a fashion system, that has absolutely nothing to do with the fashion industry today. It has been reinvented.
It's based on materialism. The problem is that comes at a really high price.
Garment factory collapsed, killing more than 1,000.
Clashes between clothes factory workers and riot police in Cambodia.
Last November, 112 people were killed in another major factory fire.
30,000 Chinese workers have been infected.
Garment workers in Bangladesh are paying the price for cheap clothing.
Well, the promise of globalization was that it was going to be a win-win, that consumers in the rich world would get cheaper goods and people in the poorer parts of the world would get jobs, and that those jobs would give them an opportunity to work their way out of poverty.
This enormous, rapacious industry that is generating so much profit, why is it that it is unable to support millions of its workers properly?
The actual business model is completely unsustainable. Unless you change that model, you can't change anything.
When everything is concentrated on making profits, what you see is that human rights, the environment, workers' rights get lost.
My God, we can do better than this.
find it hard to watch that without tearing up. Here's the sting in the tail. To a large extent, we in the rich world cause that. I'm sure that looking around here, lots of mature Christian people who have very different values from the world. We're still a part of this system. And do we speak up enough to say the system is wrong? Because that's what we're called to do, to be salt and light, to challenge the status quo if it's not what God calls us to be in the way we should live. What we buy determines what is produced and who we buy from. How much we pay determines how it's produced. Now, just for example, if you were to go and buy an article of clothing and you know it's from an ethically fair and just supplier, then the person who's manufactured it, actually made it on the workbench, has been paid fairly, that they're allowed to go home on time. They can be part of a union to protect their rights. They will have health and safety protection as well. And then all along the chain, the planet won't have been damaged as much as if it was done much more cheaply. So there are little things we can do, and I'll talk about those in a minute, to do our bit in changing the way the system is. This is the final verse that I asked to be read. We all know this story, don't we? But what was it that upset Jesus so much? Well, two key things. Firstly, they weren't just selling these animals for sacrifice. Let me take a step back. People who came to the temple had to bring a sacrifice. You couldn't come and worship without bringing a sacrifice. It was Jewish law. There were people coming from a long way away. They couldn't bring their sacrifices with them, so they were forced to buy them when they arrived in Jerusalem. And there was money to be made here, because if you were actually inside the temple court, people couldn't come past you without buying from you, so you had a monopoly. You could control how much they had to pay for these animals. So Jesus was furious that they were making money in his father's house, in a place of prayer, but even more so, they were, as he said, a den of robbers. They were forcing people to pay even more money. And they're probably working along with the religious leaders. So he was effectively saying, you're stealing from these people and in my father's house and in his name. He was outraged. I would suggest that our global economy, our developed world economy, makes us complicit in a very similar system. Our developed world, to a large degree, does the same thing. Are we complicit in modern day a den of robbers? What can you do? What can I do? Don't want to leave you just feeling miserable. And there is a lot that we can do. One thing I would say is do your own research. That's what I did. I wasn't an expert on this 10 years ago. But I've done a lot of talking, a lot of reading. And now, that's why I'm coming to speak to you, because I was so shocked by it. I've got to share this with other Christians. I wrote a book. I do what I can through education. I speak at conferences on this as well. But don't just take my word for it. Please read around these things. I could be making it all up, couldn't I? Consider how much we buy. Again, I'm sure, looking around, you're not extravagant people, I'm sure. But do we ever buy out of want rather than out of necessity or out of habit or just desire to have something new? Limiting our consumption is really important, encouraging our families to do the same. The next thing, consider who we buy from. You can go online and find out who are the ethical companies. There's ethical consumer websites. If companies advertise their ethical policies, great. If they don't, there's certainly in clothing, more than a 50% chance they have children working in the production of their clothes, that people are not treated fairly, the environment is damaged, workers' rights are abused. So try not to shop from shops which don't care about what goes on out of eyeshot. Use your voice. Say, go to school, say, please can you teach this to our children? We don't want them to live foolishly like our generation have. Plan B resources is one that I helped set up. I have no financial interest in it at all. What I do have is an educational moral interest in it. Or even speak to your local MPs, people of influence. Other things we can do, consider your travel habits. If you fly, fly less. It's a very CO2 heavy way to travel. Can we have a smaller car, use our car less, smaller engine cars and so on, all things I'm sure you're aware of already. Switch to green electricity. If you've never done this, I really encourage you to. If you pay for your own electricity, switching to green energy, you could save 15 to 20 tons a year. It doesn't cost any more than the oil, fossil fuel burning industries to produce energy. It's all changed and shifted so quickly. And all of their money goes into more wind turbines and other ways to produce energy without damaging the planet. If you are someone who eats meat, 15% of all greenhouse gases come from the meat industry. Can we eat less meat? Do your part in keeping that down. Increase the vegetables and decrease the meat. Tastes just as good. My wife's a dietitian. The other day I had a lasagna and she said, this has got corn in it. There's no meat in it at all. I wouldn't have known. It was delicious. And consider carbon offset. When I travel, I have to travel sometimes. You can actually pay to offset the carbon that you produced by perhaps going on a flight on an aeroplane. And trees get planted with the money that you pay. So do look that up, carbon offset. If you have money and it's invested, is it invested with companies that give you a return because they're damaging the planet? The oil industry, the fashion industry, the automotive industry, others which damage the planet. So do consider your investments. Ask the company that's invested your money, where is my money invested? Who's benefiting from my money? And remember this, money is power. There are apparently about 500 million wealthy Christians, and we fall into that category. As I say, you might not think of yourself as wealthy, but on global terms, the very fact that you have a shirt on your back, or more than one shirt, probably puts you in the top 20% of the richest people in the world. If all wealthy Christians changed how they behaved so that we cared about other people, cared about the planet, and didn't just put growth as the most important thing, what our society does, what a change there would be. 500 million people using their voice, using their buying power to change the system. What would Jesus do? Would he live like that, or would he live like the guy next door? Or we just wanted to keep up with the Joneses, or do we want to be just a little lower than the angels? I've asked that we sing this song in a moment. It's one of my favourites. There's another one. I'm a really emotional guy. I get quite choked up by words sometimes. And whenever it gets to break my heart for what breaks yours, it always gets me. I would hope that all of us just want to have the heart of Christ. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pray a prayer in a moment using these words. And then as we sing the song in a minute, let's just sort of challenge ourselves. Do I want my eyes to be open to the injustices, or am I happy just to keep my eyes closed and carry on ploughing my own furrow? Can I actually have that same heart of love for those people around the planet that you have for them, Lord? Will you be prepared to have your heart broken, to be sad, to be upset, to have tears when you see injustice? And then that last bit, I want to live my whole life for you, Lord. All of it as I walk from this life to eternity. So let's pray. Father God, all of us have unclean hearts. You know that. You love us and you forgive us. But Lord, we want to be clean in the way in which we live. Lord, we want our eyes to be open to the things that you see that perhaps we don't see, so that we can demonstrate love that you have for others around us. Lord, help us to have compassion. Let our hearts break for the things which break your heart, so that we can spend this life living for your kingdom, not for our kingdom, for your glory, not for our personal glory. Now, and as we walk through this life to eternity. I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.